this bolt of lightning shot across the universe and inspired me with the idea that we have to do a podcast. And that's what I wanted to tell you. We should do a podcast. Okay, bye.
I hit record. Did you hit record? Are you ready?
I am ready. I just did a hit record.
Okay, here we go. Welcome to Feature Creep, colon.
Built-in microwave, semicolon.
Not every conversation needs to be a podcast.
Shut up. Yes, it does.
Great. Welcome to our podcast. I am Ned. This is Meg. Or you're Meg. I'm Ned.
I am Meg.
Yes. And and we have a podcast.
Guilty.
And this is it. And we've had a podcast for a while now. Welcome on board if this is your first one. If this is the last one you're going to listen to, cool. Hopefully it'll be a good one. We'll find out. We're making it right now.
Right.
Yeah, what's the deal? So you can also if you have thoughts about this podcast, like you're just like outraged and you just want to leave us like a super nasty message about it, you can email Dana, D-A-N-A at fcbm.io. Dana is the founder and CEO of this podcast. So
yeah.
It's her fault, really, when it comes down to it. So that's really all there is to say about that. So send her all the nasty emails.
She totally peer pressured us into making a podcast.
100%. Yeah. And here we are. 4 years?
It's been... Yeah, because the first one we did was in 2019.
Right.
Before COVID even happened.
Before COVID. Yeah. Yeah. We were
Seems like a lifetime ago.
We're like the hipsters of podcasts. Like we were podcasting before it was cool to podcast during COVID.
Right.
But not before it was cool to podcast.
Right.
Like
exactly,
like way late to the show, but like before everybody decided to, before the other everybody, not that everybody, the other everybody.
We were up in like the 60th percentile.
Yeah, and all of this is relevant to the title because so I live in San Diego and I listen to a radio station not infrequently when I'm driving around, which is 94.9, right. And they often have their like station identification break. So 94.9 KBZT is a sort of, you know, commercial radio station in San Diego area. Apparently it's owned by Odyssey Inc. Anyway, alternative rock. They play a lot of just kind of, you know,
modern stuff, like contemporary.
A fair amount of modern stuff. I would say like contemporary. I would say, let's see, they play alternative in the realm of like, God, I don't know. I suck at this. This isn't the point. They play music. It's alternative, like Velvet Underground and shit, like, or, you know, later Dead Kennedys or like more modern. Would
oh,
be
Dead
like
pretty great.
Some grunge, like, you know, occasionally Rolling Stones or like some, you know, REM maybe sometimes, mm-hmm. Weezer.
I was in an argument lately with someone who insisted that Toad the Wet Sprocket was a Christian rock band. And I'm like, not true.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, they are, though. And I'm like, no, they are not. You're thinking of Live, which was around at the same time.
Yes,
definitely
Live,
a Christian
definitely
rock band.
Christian,
you know,
yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. I feel it.
God,
coming back again. Right?
Yeah. You know,
also very famous, definitely a Christian rock band. We'll tell you how they're a Christian rock band, not Toad the Wet Sprocket, who is not a Christian rock band.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, you know, like Red Hot Chili Peppers, fucking,
oh my God.
You know, 21 Pilots, about, like, yeah.
We anyway. Never talked about Stone Temple Pilots?
Also Stone Temple. I was going to say 21 Pilots, but also.
Oh, I don't know who 21 Pilots is.
They're like sort of, God, I don't know, like electropop kind of, or like, yeah. I don't know. Anyway, there's a point to this, which is that the station does a station identification break, and oftentimes they have like a little tagline or whatever. And one of the things they say is like they kind of make fun of like San Diego culture. They'll just like talk about like, you know, like, oh, you know, you're like, I don't say this, but I know they like basically imply like, you know, you're from San Diego if you think of like flip flops as like reasonable, like work attire, which is 100% true. Like just, yeah, like flip flops, board shirts and a hoodie is like, you know, for sure. Like, considered, what is it like casual work, like what is it, professional
business
or
casual
business casual, yeah. That's one. Anyway, yeah. So they have this tag, like one of the things they say is they're like, not every podcast or not every conversation needs to be a podcast, which is where we came up with this title, because every time I hear it makes me think of this, our podcast, because we've been doing this now for years, and it cracks me up every time I hear it, because like absolutely, it's just like two fucking assholes make a podcast, like no one needs to listen to this shit, like what are you doing?
I mean, we do everything we can not to encourage people to listen to it. Like, we don't advertise it anywhere. We don't make any money off of it. We don't keep track of who's listening to it. Like,
the fact that there are like consistently hundreds of people who download. I mean, who are these people? I don't know.
Who are these people?
I like, we don't have a lot of stats because we also don't give that much of a fuck. So like, we don't have like a lot of tracking software. Every once in a while, like we have like, I think if I log into our
Google Analytics was tracking stuff, but they like shut that down, didn't they?
Yeah, they shut that down, and I was like, you know, that like Google Analytics kind of goes against our philosophy anyways. Like we need to not have that. So I may try to set some shit up on the server at some point so we can at least see that like people are still downloading the shit. Like right now we're kind of blind, like we don't know.
Yeah.
But the last time we looked, overall it was like 200 to 300 downloads a month.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Which is about 200 to 300 more people than I'm comfortable with listening to this podcast.
Same.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the funny thing about this podcast is we were like, we just decided we should just start recording some of these conversations because they make us laugh so much. And if nobody else ever likes them, that's like kind of secondary to the purpose, which was just to put this shit somewhere that we're thinking about.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's so much we should do. Like we have that book and we should at least put a link to it on the website so
the
that
book we wrote and illustrated and published
and sold like 13 or 14 copies of or something and made like mounds of money, like one mound. Like a couple bills, like if it was all in pennies it would be like a sizable bag of pennies.
Yeah,
like it could be money bags.
It would. You could draw like the money sign on the outside of the bag and there would be enough pennies in it that it would be convincingly filled.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Like there's a lot of gold in there, except it's just pennies.
Right, exactly. yeah. So
So like pretty much most of our also having these conversations in the framework of a podcast makes us block time to actually have them, which is like the battle.
Yeah, like it's like we're not the first to think of this, nor are we probably the last to manage our long-term friendship over a podcast. Which the funny thing is, like, it is by far not the thing that like keeps it. Like, we still fucking message each other almost. No, I would be, if there's a day that goes by where we haven't messaged, I think both of us are a little bit like either one of us is like in the woods or like somehow incapacitated in some way, or anyway.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, I also appreciate that it's still organic. It's not like I wake up in the morning and I'm like, I need to text Meg because that's the routine.
Right.
It's like, oh shit, I thought of this thing and I'm texting Meg and it's like 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the morning. Like,
right. Yes. And I get up 2 hours before you do, ostensibly, if we get up at the same time, because I'm east of you. And so there's usually something you've said after I have inadvertently fallen asleep for the night that I wake up and look at and respond to, so then it's there when you wake up and look at it to respond to.
Right.
It's just the cycle repeats.
Exactly. This like endless fucking conversation of just it's pure hell. Anyway, you were gonna say something.
Yes. There was a bee in my yard yesterday. at 5 o'clock that I thought was dying. So I was helping it.
Yeah.
And then it didn't die. And overnight, I put it on a flower so it would have, you know, pollen and nectar to eat because Echinacea keeps producing like all the time. And so I put him on a flower and he sat there until the morning. And then he was, you know, still alive, which amazed me. And then he was crawling around on the flower, and then I was watching him, and then he fell off the flower at some point, and I was like, oh no. But then he wandered back onto the patio on foot, and I was like, oh my gosh. So I picked him up and put him on another flower, and then he fell off again. And I think it might be a he. I don't know. I say that because it's a bumblebee, and there are he bumblebees, and they only live to like a week or two. And so like them dying is a regular occurrence. But usually they die quicker. And so I'm like, what is up with this bee? It just seems very confused. And so I keep finding it and putting it back on flowers. And I don't know if I'm like prolonging its misery because I keep giving it a food source when it would otherwise run out of energy pretty quickly.
I was just going to say, like, it occurs to me. And again, I'm no fucking bee expert here. What is a bee expert name? What's the name?
I mean, an entomologist, right?
Yeah, like, I'm no fucking entomologist.
I don't know if...
But it does occur to me that it's possible that like part of their dying mechanism is they can no longer source food.
Right.
Like their brain goes or they lose the ability to navigate to a point where they can't feed themselves and then they sort of die of starvation, which sounds horrible as a human, but who knows what their experience of that is.
Right. And so part of the reason that I was so intent on helping this little bee is because when we came home from our afternoon walk yesterday, there was another dead bumblebee. Well, so first there was the dead bumblebee and I was like, oh no, dead bumblebee. When did you get here? Like the walk only takes 20 minutes. And so this bee crawled out of wherever, died right in front of my back door and was like completely dead when I found it. So it happened very quickly, which is usually my experience. Like you don't see them in the throes of death. Usually you just find their little, wee little carcass. And so I saved it because I'm kind of keeping like once they've died already and I'm finding them around the yard, I'm keeping them to compare to each other and just see, you know, if I notice anything. And so I have two bumblebees in the basement right now. And this one that was struggling yesterday appeared in distress, it seems like, after I found the dead one. And I was like, oh no, two in a row. Like, what's going on? And I was really worried that they had been like poisoned by a pesticide nearby or something. And there was going to be like a raft of these dead bees coming into my yard. So I was kind of worried about it. And that's kind of why I was keeping track of this one that was meandering around and doing strange things, because I thought, oh, like if they keep coming after this, I kind of want to have a collection of them and keep track of them and have them to keep so that I can like talk to the U of M bee lab about it maybe or something and just be like, is this of any interest to anyone? Like I collected all of these dying bees. I'm interested to see where they died. How do I figure that out? So
right.
I don't know. I was trying to think long term with this, right? And so I got up this morning and he was still alive and meandering around. And then like he keeps falling off the flower. And the last time he fell off just recently, he plopped into the underbrush and I haven't been able to find him since. And so now I don't have him to figure out. I can't do a bee autopsy.
Oh.
A botopsy.
A botopsy. A biopsy.
God, this is what Why is that so hard to say?
I don't know.
So, yeah, that conversation just happened on a podcast.
Yes, it did. You're welcome. Okay. Thank you. Good night.
What else?
I don't know. I had something to say and now I can't fucking remember what it was.
No, because I blabbed your ear off about this bee.
Yeah. We were talking about the podcast and so we have, like we could just talk about potential. So I said, oh, it's fucking hell that we're like always talking to each other every day, which obviously is a joke. But it occurred to me, we do have a podcast topic that we do want to do a little research into. And it might be a fun thing if you're listening to this and we haven't already recorded the podcast, if people want to write in about, which was like, the idea, like designing group hell project. Right, because didn't we kind of do designing hell before? I feel like we did designing dystopia.
We did do designing dystopia. We did a whole series of those.
So I was kind of thinking maybe we should do designing hell and do a series of those. And we can like kind of like, you know, do a broad overview of like the various sort of concepts of hell that we know about. This all kind of came about. I suggested this topic a couple weeks ago. I can't remember what I was watching, or somebody had said something and I was like, how do you get into hell? Like, I mean, conceptually, right? Like there's,
yeah,
you know, every religion has their different, you know, not every religion has a hell, but right, every religion has their different approach to the concept of religion and spirituality. And, you know, and they're not actually, some of them are very similar, but some of them are like very disparate and very different. Like Zoroastrianism is fucking bizarre, cool shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, it just kind of like stuck in my head as an idea of being like, oh, how could we, you know, get into hell if we want, if one wanted, yeah, to go to hell, how would one do it?
Do you know what's super funny?
I know there's like several things that are super funny.
I started to type how to go and Google auto-populated how to go to hell. And then I clicked enter and the first thing that pops up is Reddit. Our, yes, Christianity. So subreddit Christianity on Reddit. What, yeah, does one realistically have to do to definitively go to hell? We are not the first people who have been thinking about this, clearly.
No, it's so great.
It says, so great. Tagline, like, how bad of a person do you have to be? Because I feel like I deserve hell just for living a life with a bunch of little sins.
Right.
This person has a very pointed question.
Oh, man. There's,
that's funny. I mean, yeah, I don't know. Like, how, let's see, how many religions have hell?
Good question. I'm going to look up what the Bible says about hell. Here we go.
My keyboard work. Ooh,
openbible.info. That sounds good.
This is super weird. This is also the alternative. How can I not go to hell? How to go to hell and come back alive?
Right.
So there's this website that's like, here's how Jesus went to hell and came back. And I'm like, what? There's so many weird things on the internet. Okay, here's a question unrelated to hell.
Yeah.
Is the inshittification of the internet about how most of the internet isn't written by actual people anymore? Or is it just that stuff is grinding to an unworkable state?
It depends. So the person who coined that has a pretty strong...
Yes. We got to look that up, too.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember who... so there's a guy, I think... I think there's a guy named Cory Doctorow.
Yes, he's wonderful.
Yeah, Canadian, British blogger, journalist, and science fiction author. But I don't know if he's the one who coined it. So I think based on what I remember having read about and listened to, or like watched some YouTube recordings of people speaking about the inshittification of the internet, is that AI for sure is going to accelerate that process, but it's not the thing. Like, the inshittification of the internet is the you know, the idea of things becoming you know, basically the way it butts up against capitalism, right? So it's like, we need to make money. We want to make money. We have all this money and we want to control power and information that can be controlled and regulated and used to generate wealth. And so, generate wealth is, I think the right word is to capture wealth.
Capture wealth.
Yeah, it can be used to capture wealth. And so, what the inshittification of the internet kind of comes down to is like, you look at how Google used to be this amazing search engine, and there was this like point like in like the mid-2000s, I would say, like in the early aughts, where it was like really starting to blow up and people were like, man, this is like really fucking useful. And then maybe 10 years later, people were like, oh shit, like, you know, most people, you're just going to Google it, right? And then, but at that point, it was already teetering over past the peak and advertising was starting to heavily influence how it worked, to the point that now it's useless. Like, I Google shit. I still Google shit out of habit, but I'm just like, this is useless. Like, I've stopped learning things from Google, right? Like, Google doesn't teach me shit. Like, it's just fucking pointless. Like, it's at best kind of an easier way to get to websites I already know about.
Yes.
I'm just kind of like, what's it called? Fucking Google that shit. Oh, yeah. That thing. That's the one. Yeah, I want to go there. Like, finding information and knowing about a thing, like, it's not doing shit for you. Before it used to, but now all of that, and of course, why that happens is varied, but generally it comes down to a matter of advertising, right? Like, or basically money. You're for sale and they've sold your shit. And now the people who are buying it, they don't need to give you a good product. And so the idea is, it's just become this thing where it's like, the internet is now so full of shit that is garbage. It's just all in shitified, right? Because everybody's like, if I have something, like, it's kind of like that thing where, like, you know, Amazon's done the same thing for goods, right? Like, we used to be able to be like, oh, that's a good quality product. And now it's a fucking crap show. Shoot.
Yeah.
And mostly you're going to buy shit and it's like, looks like the thing, shows up and kind of behaves like the thing, but it's like the very bare minimum of what that thing needs to be, whether it's a chair, a couch, fucking toothbrush, like, you know, whatever fucking good it is, everything's consumable now.
Yes.
There's nothing non-consumable. Everything is consumable. Everything you buy is not a permanent thing that now that's the one version you have for your life and maybe your children's lives and et cetera. Like, that concept's gone. And so that's the same thing with the information on the internet, right? It used to be that, like, people, you know, spent time and energy, like, you know, creating their, like, sharing their expertise on the internet through blogs and, you know, creating websites and creating access to information. And then it turned out that Google sold all of it out from under us because they were selling advertising to access your information before you knew that they were, which was they were like, here, you know, in order to find that information, we're going to sell advertising. And then, so the enchantification, like, and then the enchantification is the aspect where it's like, well, we've already created this frenzy of, like, how one gets paid to generate content for the internet. And then AI is like, well, I can just do it for you in a moment.
Yeah.
And so people are like, great. So I can get $10 for 1 minute of work instead of 4 or 5 hours of work. And so then they, you know, do that. And now...
Downward spiral.
Yeah, downward spiral. No one's, you know, and all the AI really does, it's not like, it doesn't, it's not novel. It doesn't generate novel information. It remixes shit. It's like fucking DJs. Like, it might be fun. I'm not knocking, like, it's a fucking skill. People, like, you know, good DJs are good DJs. But at the end of the day, there's a reason they kind of moved from, like, I'm a producer who produces music as opposed to someone who remixes music. Like, and even then it's like a blurred line. But the AI, the AI is like, they're just like a shitty ass fucking DJ. Like, it's just like, oh, I'm going to take a little bit of this and a little bit of that and I'm going to make it kind of sound good.
So I sent you, I can't remember if I sent you, did I send you the thing about Adam Conover, who, you know, like, Adam explains it all?
Yeah, we were, yeah, I watched, comedian. I watched most of that. I actually had that in my queue for a while and then you reminded me that I should watch it.
Yeah, so
I watched
most of that. I thought that was really good. It, it was an interview with a guy named Ed Zatron. Something like that.
Sounds right. But there's a 3 weeks ago, there's a YouTube by YouTube video by Adam Conover titled "The AI Bubble is Bursting" with Ed Zatron.
It's so good. It's so good. It's like,
It's quite good.
The very concise and direct description of what the fuck is wrong with all of this and why it's immediately not working. Like, it's like, it never worked. It's never supposed to work. It's only supposed to work in a hypothetical future sense long enough to get you to spend money on it. And then by the time we catch up to when it would have needed to have worked for you to be confident in your investment, we've got another idea that we're selling you on.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's just a scam. Like the same way that crypto is a scam and gosh, I don't know what else. Basically, all of the social networks are all scams. I don't know. But it was really good. Highly recommend. And it was like not something I usually watch. Like I didn't know who Adam's guest was at all before I watched it. And I was like, oh, this guy's great. I got to sign up for his newsletter, which I did.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name.
Yes. Yeah.
I sign up for so many newsletters now.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Speaking of which, I switched over to paying the full year upfront for our subscriptions rather than $5 a month because I could just feel all this money siphoning away from us before I even had a chance to like get a handle on where it was going.
Yeah.
And it's much, I think it's much easier to like deal with if you just, it like, if you're into supporting people who publish independent work like on Medium or Substack or Patreon or whatever. I don't know. I just think the like rent seeking model where
yeah.
you pay every month a little bit rather than just a yearly subscription up front, like is it a very effective way of siphoning more and more and more and more money off of you without you even realizing how much you're spending.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also I mean it's tricky, right? Because it's like
yeah, because if you want to support somebody with $120 a year subscription to their thing, it's much easier to do $10 a month than it is to do $120, unless
you can't afford it.
Right. I mean, if you can't afford it, that and you still want to support somebody, the monthly small amount works out great. But like if you, I feel like that carries the inherent risk of you being like, well, it's only $5. It's only $5 here. It's only $5 there. And before you know it, you're spending that much anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. That was what was the case for me. If you're like, where is all my money going? Look at your subscriptions.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is a good example of where, you know, the rich save, like the rich spend less, right?
Yeah.
Like if you can afford to spend $100 for the year as opposed to $200 paying, you know, month to month or whatever, you know, you are better off, right? And then you save money. I mean, I understand, like, it's complicated, right? I mean, mostly your subscriptions are probably the same kind as mine, right? Where it's like, I'm trying to support these other, like, artists and things, and
yeah.
I have some disposable income, and fuck yeah. You know, and if they are willing to give me a break and it's beneficial to them, like, in the micro transaction space of, like, you know, you and I paying, like, this third-party artist who is not a billionaire, $10 a month versus like but $100 for the year.
Yeah.
That's beneficial to them because they can have the money now.
Right.
And presumably the product that they're providing is something that is low cost to them in terms of like they're, you know, they're going to like they're already like, you know, it's access to their podcast or something. Like it's sort of like
yeah.
you know, and then having that money up front is, you know, that's the trade-off they've decided. But,
right.
I don't know. I have the subscription world is weird. I mean, this is where I think subscriptions yeah. make sense to me. But most of our subscriptions end up going, you know, the problem is like, they're just scooped up into these money funnels and,
right. Right. Know. So like, yeah, I just, yeah, we because Damon and I both subscribe to a bunch of different Patreons and stuff, and we want to support people. But I was like, God, I can't. We have so much money coming and going every single month with these fucking subscriptions left and right that I can't, like, I was struggling to, like, figure out, like, we're giving $2 yeah. to this person for the comic that they write and $5 over here for this person because of this thing, this, like, their Substack blog and, like, this thing over here and like, the woodworkers Damon follows on YouTube and, like, all this stuff, right? And I was just like, oh, my gosh, if we could just not have this, not have all of them in motion every single month, it would be much easier to keep track of. And
right.
Some of them, like, if you pay for a year up front rather than monthly, you get a little discount on it, too, which is kind of nice. I don't know. But yeah, just a thought. Like, I am not a person who like spends money like a drunken sailor. And I was like, why can't I figure out what is coming and going? Like, there's just too many moving parts. It was really crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I this is kind of the problem, like, inherent in the situation that we find ourselves in, right? Like, if you're not part of like a big media conglomerate, or you're not like part of a newspaper where you're a journalist, or like an organization of people that you can support, if you're out there supporting each of these people who are freelancing or doing it on their own, bully for you. That's fantastic. Yes, keep doing it. But yeah, also, like, fuck, it gets confusing because there's so many people we're trickling little tiny amounts of money to every month. And it was like crazy making, just trying to keep track of it all.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
Yeah. It's fucking crazy making indeed. Holy shit.
And all of that's why we never ask you for money.
Right? Yeah. God. I mean, if you've got money and you want to send it our way,
hey,
by all means, please do.
If you feel like paying a fee, you can pay us.
Yeah, you can absolutely feel like you're not paying enough money right now. Like, absolutely, we'd be glad to take it off your hands.
Sure, we'll take your money.
Yeah.
You can send it to us if you can figure out how.
Exactly. Yes.
Like a scavenger hunt for a bank account.
I mean, I guess you could go buy our book, which is Every Time a Bell Rings by...
It's hilarious.
So we didn't think this title through. Well, we thought this title through very well. Unfortunately, there are a lot of books called Every Time a Bell Rings. But this particular book is called Every Time a Bell Rings by Arthur G. Ennis and D. Zaster. And so you would be able to find it there. At some point, we'll probably figure out how to put a link in our podcast so people can actually...
Yeah, someday.
Yeah.
We're also thinking about writing a new book, and it's going to also be a picture book like Every Time a Bell Rings, and it's going to be wonderful, and we're going to do the art in watercolor, and it's going to be...
Yes, it's going to be amazing.
Staggering work of genius.
Yeah, it's going to be ornithologically focused.
Ornithologically oriented.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So here's something that I can tell you about that's really weird and funny and true, and that makes it great because it's not happening to you, which is the criteria for funny, right? True,
right.
It's not happening to you. So I have developed something called Stridor, which sounds like a medieval warrior's name or something, but it's not. It's actually when you inhale and something makes a noise like snoring, except it's not in your nasal passage, it's like in your throat and chest. And we're not sure why it's happening to me. And it gets worse and it gets better at times. And last week it got so bad that like my airway narrowed and I couldn't get enough air down to my lungs. My lungs are still fine. They're totally cool.
Yeah.
It's just the bottleneck of my throat that is like the problem, because when I try to take air in, it doesn't make it through my throat in a sufficient quantity to satisfy my oxygen needs. And my oxygen saturation is really high because my lungs are working, but I have to take a lot of breaths to get it in there. And so it's real annoying, and maybe has something to do with my vocal cords. We're not sure. Possibly an allergic reaction to something that we haven't figured out yet.
Yeah.
And it's called Stridor. And I was telling my physical therapist about it today, and he's like, this has been going on since April. Why did you never mention this? I was like, because no thanks to the fucking medical establishment, I just learned the word for it a week ago.
Right. Yes.
Even though it's been 3 months I've been weirdly sick with it.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
So there, you know, the more you know, if you're having weird sounds when you breathe in, like when you wheeze, it's when you breathe out, and when you breathe in and it kind of makes a weird snoring vibration sound, and it's not your snoring parts.
It's not your snoring parts.
Could be Stridor.
Could be.
Which I think is the same root word as like strident, like when you are stridently speaking.
Oh, yeah.
Stridently. It's like, yeah. And it kind of feels like I might lose my voice at any time, but it never... That never happens. Like, it feels like I'm right on the verge. I don't know. Maybe I have some kind of weird respiratory thing. But anyway, I'm going to another doctor tomorrow to find out, because the first doctor I went to when I was in distress and couldn't breathe and was tempted to take some leftover prednisone from a different thing, I was like, oh gosh. And I went to the urgent care, and the doctor was like, have you ever heard of floppy windpipe? And I was like, No, and I don't think it's why Windpipe. Like,
yeah.
Just for reference, I don't know how to describe to you what it feels like exactly, except to say that I don't think it's my windpipe. It's like the soft tissue in my throat that gets like in the way. Anyway,
yeah.
He was like, he then gave me the like this printout, and I wish I had it handy, and I don't. He gave me this printout that's like, maybe you have this disease. And it was, yeah. When I got home and looked it up on the internet, it is officially only a disease that infants can have because it's related to your body developing around the time of your birth.
Ugh.
So like, not that.
Yeah.
Are you trying to infantilize me like other male doctors I've seen?
God, right? Are you sure?
So that, and he also didn't give me anything to help me breathe, which I found hilarious. Like, I was in distress at the doctor, like, I can't breathe. And they were like, you need to go see a different doctor, and like sent yeah. me away with a little set of instructions for people who have a disease of infant age.
Infant age, yes.
Only. Like, only impacts newly born children.
God.
At which point they have to like have surgeries and things to fix it. So like, obviously not that. Also, I didn't have that when I was an infant, and it's been this way my whole life. Like, this started in
right.
April.
Right.
So, really weird. But yeah, there's a word for it if it's happening to you and your doctors don't tell you anything helpful about your condition.
Right.
Oh my God. Yeah. And then hilariously, like, after I saw that doctor who was totally like, I don't care, and sent me away, the
yeah.
next morning, less than 12 hours later, I had an appointment with an immunologist to ask them, hey, can you help me figure out why I'm allergic to tetanus vaccines and if there are actually any tetanus vaccine versions out there that I can have?
Uh-huh.
And that doctor never even showed up to my appointment.
Oh, garbage.
Garbage. Yep. Total garbage. And then I sat on hold.
I remember that. I was
yeah.
that. Yeah.
I sat on hold to insist that they not bill me for an appointment that never happened. And when they picked up the phone, they were really surprised to learn that I had been on hold for an hour while driving my car.
Right.
And they were like, well, can you do another appointment right now? And I was like, no.
Yeah.
I scheduled this appointment 3 months in advance. So no, today is not going to work now. And they were like, okay. And I was like, in fact, I don't actually really want to reschedule this appointment. I think I'm just going to go somewhere else entirely because Health Partners has let me down big time twice in 12 hours.
Yeah.
And then they were like, totally get it. And then several hours after that phone call, where I was like,
nope, yeah.
don't want to reschedule, don't need your help anymore, just want to make sure you're not going to bill my insurance for an appointment that never happened, they started bombarding my phone line with voicemails and telephone calls about rescheduling me for the end of that day. And in one of the voicemails, they were like, we think the doctor might be able to see you maybe later today. And I was like, I'm not returning that voicemail. So then they called me 5 times in 2.5 hours and left me a voicemail every single time after I specifically told them on the phone, I do not wish to reschedule. I will find a different doctor. And then they called me 5 times the next day. So 10 times in 2 days, they reached out to me after I'd already told them,
God,
no, thank you.
I didn't realize they'd called
2 days in a row. I know, I didn't tell you about the second day because by that time I was yeah. just like, I'm not even going to dedicate any more of my energy to thinking about this. But I was just like, this demonstrates for me the whole problem. Like, you guys are super bad at communication, which is why you never bothered to inform me that the doctor I was supposed to see at 10 a.m. was running late. And then I sat in an appointment all by myself for 45 minutes with no doctor and no word about what was going on. And then I had to sit on hold for another hour after that happened.
Right. Yeah.
So I spent 2 hours of my life just waiting for someone at this organization to acknowledge me when I had an appointment, and they couldn't do that. And then nothing I said to them when I did get a hold of them made a difference at all, because they immediately started doing the thing to me that I told them I didn't want to do, which is begging me for a reschedule.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, your whole problem is communication, and you're doing it still.
Like, right. Yeah,
you don't listen to a word I say, and you're not interested in what my actual needs are, as evidenced by the fact that you are now literally bombing my phone, like begging me to set up another appointment after I told you there was no way in hell I was going to do that. So yeah, that was fucking weird. And that just reminded me of the inshittification of the internet in some ways, because mm-hmm. in order for me to, like, the reason I got a referral to this immunologist was because I was bitten by a cat, which you were also almost here for. It happened like the day before you came to visit in April.
Oh God, that's so right. Yeah.
The thing with my stridor in my chest and the breathing problems coincided with when this cat bit me. And I had to wait and see if I was going to get a rabies vaccine. And I ended up going to the urgent care then, too. And they also didn't do anything for me because they were like, well, it looks like you cleaned out the wound yourself pretty good.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm never going to an urgent care again because you people don't do anything. And except they gave me a referral for this immunologist to see why I couldn't have tetanus shots, because they were going to give me one of those for the cat bite, too. And they couldn't, because I'm allergic to them.
Right.
So I thought, oh, maybe we'll get to the bottom of this lifelong mystery of why I'm allergic to tetanus vaccines and have to walk around on a tightrope between life and death at all times.
Right. Yes.
With no tetanus vaccine coverage. So like, I was like, okay, well, at least I got that out of it. Right. And so I was kind of excited to talk to this doctor yeah. about this problem, because it is an existential threat that I live with every day.
Yeah.
And like, it was nuts that she just like never showed up. Like,
yep.
Just like nothing. Like, I got nothing. And, I don't know. Like, the other night when I went in for the stridor and I couldn't breathe, they were like, go see an ENT. And then the ENT called me, but they robocalled me with an AI.
Yep. Yep.
And I was like, this is the fucking problem, right? Like, had I had an in-person meeting with this immunologist, which would have been the smart thing, because in order to do immunology, you need to take like people's blood and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're not going to do that over a video. So the only way I'm allowed to talk to you is if you funnel me through a video chat first, which costs as much as an actual in-person doctor's appointment where you could actually take my blood. So you're forcing me to pay twice as much as I would normally pay for a doctor's visit to go through your stupid gatekeeping computer screen first, and then maybe get to see you. Or in fact, what's going to happen is you're not even going to show up. And I'm still going to have to pay for an appointment, and I'm going to have to go through an appeals process, and they're going to be so upset when I talk to them.
God, I know. Ugh.
Oh, God. I'm going to be as tenacious about this as I was about the insurance on my damaged house, which we all know how that paid off. I got a new exterior on my house.
Yeah,
because all I have is time until I die.
Well, maybe you'll get a new immunosystem.
That would be cool.
It would be cool. I don't think it works that way, but it would be cool.
I mean, I feel like if they really wanted to, they could reprogram my cells like they do for immunotherapy. But like, instead of cancer, they could do it for whatever this is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably.
I mean, I think that with given the right understanding, we could potentially develop that kind of technology.
Let's do it in the basement.
Let's do it in the basement. Yeah.
Let's just do it ourselves. Because every time I go to the doctor, I like figure something out, and then I just do it myself anyway.
Right.
They're just gatekeepers at this point. They're not really helpful.
It is funny how that works, right? Like, it is a little bit tricky there.
Yeah. But what else? What else can we tell in our conversation? Oh, here's an interesting thing that happened that you also got to somewhat witness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So in my neighborhood, there mm-hmm. is a cemetery just across the street from me, and it has this grove of really old growth oaks. They're like hundreds of years old. And this family of hawks and the hawk descendants, like this ongoing lineage of hawks, has lived over there for many years, and they bring their chicks over to my side of the street to fledge them in like really tall trees. Mm-hmm. And so the baby hawks are making tons and tons of noise right now, which means that they're getting close to fledging. And one of the parents zoomed down into my yard and killed a rabbit.
Yes.
And then I didn't see it. And I heard the commotion outside, and so I went outside to record some video of nothing so that you could just hear the hawks and how noisy they are. And when I got out there, I saw this hawk in my yard, and then she hopped up on my tomato trellis that Damon built for me, and she hung around in the yard for a while.
Yeah.
And then she took a bath in my bird bath.
Really?
Yes. And
she likes
that
your
was
yard.
Fucking cool. My yard is the shit. My yard has so much biodiversity in it now. It's incredible. So I expect they'll probably come back. I might get to see baby hawks in my yard. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yes, that would be really fun.
But then she left the rabbit, and so I had to bury it.
Oh, yeah, that was...
What I said to you, as soon as you widen your circle of compassion, you immediately get your heart stomped out. Like, because nature is a horror show.
Right? This is one of the things I've always had like a hard time with, people who are really like very religious and believe that there's like a purpose to all this shit. And it's like, all you have to do is spend a little time watching nature and just see how fucking difficult everything is.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to have anything to do with your God that basically created this shit show of a fucking, like, evolution is right. Brutal. Like,
yes.
For every, like, fucking happy-go-lucky perfect frog sitting on that fucking lily pad eating flies all day, first of all, there's, you know, 10 million dead flies that suffered at the hands of that frog. But right. More importantly, there's, like, you know, 10 million frog-like creatures that suffered and died and failed to reproduce or tried to reproduce in order to produce this one frog, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, died horrible deaths at various points in their lives. Like, you know.
Thankless,
yeah.
Thankless, yeah. There's a real cycle of life going on out there, and it's ugly.
Mm-hmm.
But I love it, and I can't wait for another hawk to show up in my yard. My goal is to become friends with them.
The hawks.
Mm-hmm. One time, several years ago, before I knew Damon, so it was like at least 8 years ago, I was walking through my yard and one flew over my shoulder and she touched my ear with her wing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
She flew like, and I heard the air envelope around her too. It was like a when she flew by, and she flew from behind me to in front of me, and she flew over my right shoulder and she touched my ear, and then she landed on the fence right in front of me and looked at me.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing?
Cool. Yeah, that's really amazing.
I was touched by an apex predator.
You were touched by an apex predator. Yes.
And I lived to tell the tale.
You did, yes.
I mean, that's so cool. Like, she obviously did it on purpose. Like, birds don't just, like, accidentally touch you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
It was fucking cool. Those birds are super cool. I love the sound they make. They sound like squeaky toys. Like, you know when you
get a little squeaky toy?
Uh-huh. It's like, yee-hee!
Yeah.
And they bite on it. Yeah, they sound just like squeaky toys. I discovered them last summer. Like, they've always been around, but I have never made the connection between what I'm hearing and where they are in their life cycle. And so now I have learned to listen for the babies, and they're very loud in the early morning, and that's usually when they're out hunting and before it gets hot,
right,
and the sun is all the way up. And so I usually wake up to the sound of them yelling for food. They're very loud.
Cheep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They're so cool. I can't wait to see them learning how to fly. They're really awkward when they learn how to fly. They just kind of like make short flights from like tree to tree.
Yeah.
And they kind of like bobble around a little bit. Like, they're not graceful at first at all. Mm-hmm. And lucky we got those matching binoculars I can watch them with.
Yes.
If you didn't hear that episode, I mean, we didn't have a whole episode about it, but I know we've talked about these binoculars. They're from the 1970s. They're Nikons. They are brown and black, and they have a little rainbow on them.
A little secret hidden rainbow when you adjust the eyepiece separation distance, mm-hmm. they crack in the middle, like on purpose, like there, and there's a little space that opens up, and in there, there's a little hidden rainbow.
It's really so cool. Cute.
Like almost the scale of the angle is the color, right? So like there's like these lines, I think, if I remember. Because we have the same ones. But yeah.
Yes, we have identical ones.
Well, because you were telling me about wanting to find some, and I was like, I'll help you look. And then I found those on eBay and I was like, damn it, I want those. I have to have these ones.
These are so good. Amazing.
Yeah. I love the way they look. Like the front, when you're looking at the person holding them, it gives me sort of like Wall-E eye vibes, like from that movie Wall-E.
Wall-E shape, 100%.
Yeah. Almost. I mean, obviously, they came well before Wall-E. I wonder what. What inspired?
They definitely, Wally looks like they used these binoculars as the model for the face of Wally.
Right?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. They were like, they were Nikon binoculars from the 70s. Like, I wonder if that's kind of like an iconic Nikon design shape.
Form. According to Wikipedia, Wally's eyes were inspired by a pair of binoculars Stanton was given when watching the Oakland Athletics play against the Boston Red Sox. He missed the entire inning because he was distracted by them. But it doesn't say
what they were.
Now I've got to look it up.
Yes.
So I'm going to find the source.
I will pee my pants right now if you tell me that our set of binoculars that we share as twinsies were the inspiration for Wally.
Okay, so
here's a factoid. My fig tree, my fiddle leaf fig, is almost as tall as I am.
Oh yeah, no shit. Yeah,
I bought it as a baby and now it's almost 5.5 feet tall.
So the quote, according to the San Francisco Gate as of June 25th, 2008, an article written by Peter Hartlaub titled Planet Wally, let's see. Andrew Stanton has heard many theories about what inspired the look of the lead character Wally, from the alien in E.T. to the robot in the 1986 film Short Circuit. The truth is much more regional. The idea came while the director was at an Oakland A's playoff game almost 5 years ago when the home team was competing against the Boston Red Sox. I missed the whole inning because my editor from Nemo passed me his binoculars, says Stanton, during a recent interview at Pixar's headquarters in Emeryville. I spent the entire inning staring at the binoculars, making them move around. I said, that's it. That's exactly the face I need. Nice. So
I love that.
Yeah, but doesn't say specifically which binocular, like even a brand. Although I'm going to guess it's Nikon. So somebody on Reddit says, I got the same binoculars that inspired Wally's eyes. And I wouldn't disagree. I'm going to send you the link so you can also look.
This will be we'll just concur.
Yeah. Hold on.
Did you watch a baby hippo video?
I did watch a baby hippo video. I'll send it to you. You can Google any, like baby pygmy hippo from a couple years ago. Like it was like a montage. It was just an adorable baby hippo romping around in the water, playing with mom or whatever. Let's see.
So these totally, I agree with you. I think they are the, like somebody asked, what model are these? I saw the other comment about this topic, but with how many binoculars Bushnell has made, it's really difficult to just search Bushnell binoculars to find these. So
Nikon Venturer 2 is one of the possible, which is the ones we have.
Okay.
So that's funny. Or similar. Nikon kind of, we either have Nikon Venturer 2 or like Nikon Venturer, because the Venturer 2s that I'm looking at do not have the little rainbow thing in there. But like other, like it's also reasonable to imagine that like there's a whole line of binoculars that were from this era that looked like this, that came from Nikon. And my guess is that they're Nikons, but and also like this guy's like, they're called Bushnell binoculars. I got mine on eBay. You're full of shit. You don't know what you're talking about.
That's right.
Bushnell makes a fuck ton of binoculars. That answer is like saying, you know, they're binoculars, dick. Like,
yeah,
no, you're wrong. Anyway,
Very cute.
Let's see. Yeah, but nobody's really. And the problem with these ones is that.
Where did you get your teeny tiny little Nikons?
So, the teeny tiny ones that I have are a Nikon reproduction called Nikon. Hold on, I'm gonna look them up.
Okay.
Nikon
Micron?
Nikon Micron, yeah. And it's
that's so cute.
MIKRON. So they're they did a reproduction and they're pretty expensive. But you can buy old Microns. So Nikon, like, there's a website which I'm going to send you, which is just fucking great. It's, it's insane. It's not.
Yeah.
Hold on. Let me find it. It's, I have it bookmarked. I look at it every once in a while. So let's see.
just peruse it every so often. Yeah. Nice.
Here we go. Yeah. Let's see. Fuck. Going to be impossible to find because it like has no advertising and there's no reason for people to like okay, hold on.
I'll describe these tiny little Microns. They're like so amazing. They work really great. They're teeny tiny, like,
yeah. So they're 6x15, so they're 6x magnification with a 15mm objective. So they're really, really tiny. There's a very interesting story about these ones. And let me see if I can.
It like fits in your pocket. It's like the size of a makeup compact. Like, they're so tiny.
Ah,
they're like. Yeah. Toy sized, but they're definitely not toys.
So miniaturebinoculars.com.
That's the website?
That's the website. And it is an amazing website. Oh, no, that's not the. Oh, God damn it. I did copy it. Come on, motherfucker.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. Wow. This looks like a really old school website.
Yeah, then you found it. the miniaturebinoculars.com, and I highly recommend people to go here. You will see.
It's incredible.
It's a little bit hard to read, but it is incredibly in-depth information about the style of binoculars.
Yes. There's like four different languages on this one like front page of the website.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's amazing collection of information. It's like. The person who's put this, do you remember we found that website of that like man who was like an engineer and like we did a podcast on it? Like this feels like that. Like this is like, it talks about how they work. It talks about how like reverse poro prisms work. It talks about, the sort of idea of whether these are like opera. So these are the size of opera glasses typically.
Yes,
but they are, so where I learned about these was from that movie. It's got Willem Dafoe in it, and I'm gonna look it up. Hold on. And it's like a Jack Ryan movie. So it's got what's his name, Indiana Jones dude.
Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford. Yeah.
Oh really?
Yeah. Hold on. I'm gonna find the movie. Hold on. Let's see. It's
Willem Dafoe is so delightfully weird.
Yeah. Clear and Present Danger. So,
oh,
in the movie Clear and Present Danger, is a scene where Willem Dafoe. So Willem Dafoe plays this this sort of like black ops operative, who sort of directs teams and stuff. And so he's been, I really like this movie for lots of reasons. It's very like, yeah, kill shit, go America, fucking cool, right? Like, it's and so anyway, I'm going to send you, here is a photo of him using these binoculars. I don't know which brand or style. So if you go to miniaturebinoculars.com, you will see that there are millions of,
oh my God,
versions of these that were made back in the day. Like, and when I say back in the day, I'm guessing, so there's like the Japanese origin. So Nikon made the Micron version, which was Mikron, which is what I bought a reproduction of recently. Well, like in the last 10 years. They're like in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. This design of binoculars were made by Nikon. You can still buy them on eBay used for relatively cheap if you're willing, like if you're not looking for a very particular version of them. But the quality and like condition of them may be questionable. However, they're typically like metal bodied. So the things that might be broken on them is like, if the version that you're looking at had rubber eye cups, that is going to be destroyed probably. But you know, they can also be taken apart and cleaned. And if you are familiar with that kind of work, or you know someone who's willing to kind of do that for either a reasonable fee, or they love you and they want to do it for free because you're friends or whatever, they're certainly a pretty cool pair of binoculars. Like, I love mine. I fucking love them. They're so tiny. So anyway, here's a screenshot from the movie, which I just sent to you, where Willem Dafoe is basically,
he's like laying down, they're laying down in the bushes.
Yeah.
And he's like looking, he's like resting on his elbows and looking through these tiny binoculars and talking into a radio while somebody uses a scope on a giant ass fucking gun of some kind.
Yeah. So, the guy, so this scene is when, Escobedo, and Cortez are the only members. So let's see. I'm trying to find if they have the character.
It's names. Hilarious that the guy with the gun is like fully camouflaged and Willem Dafoe is like
with his blonde hair and just
his blonde hair and his white skin illuminated in the sunlight right next to the guy doing the shooting.
So there's context for that, which is that the guy with the full camo is a sniper who is, I think they met up in the jungle and he'd already been on patrol or something. And like Willem Dafoe is like come out to find him. And so like Willem Dafoe is like also wearing blue jeans and shit. Like,
oh my God.
Cause like he got ambushed and so it's a good movie. If you like that kind of like sort of, it's Tom Clancy, Jack Ryan novel shit. Right.
Yeah.
The book of the same name, Clear and Present Danger. You'll also notice, and this is where shit got out of hand for me, right? So when I saw these, I was like, oh my God, I have to have a pair of these if I can find them. They're fucking amazing. And so if you look at the pair that he's holding, you'll notice that the focus wheel is actually kind of oversized. Mine is not like that. So the pair that I have are not this pair. And I'm really curious to know. Also, this pair has been wrapped in what looks like gaffer's tape or something to kind of cut down the glare, like to make them look more military, like, which is something I don't know how historically accurate this is. I'm very curious who, if you're into this shit and you know, like you're listening and you know about this, like, please write in. I have tried to research and find out who was in charge of the props at this time, like who came up with this prop, like why these binoculars. I mean, I get like they're fucking great, right? They're tiny. Like in the movie it's absurd like how much magnification they give him, but obviously in real life like they're fucking like six or seven. Yeah, like when it comes to binoculars, you can't reasonably, if you have like 12 times magnification on binoculars, it's really hard to hold it steady enough to see something reasonable.
Yes. Because every tiny muscle movement you make or breath you take in is amplified by the same amount. Like,
by like 12 times. And so your image is just swimming everywhere.
Yeah.
Usually if you have like above, like I'd say like 8 magnification, you'd typically have like a tripod mount or something and use them kind of like you would a telescope, where they're very sturdy and then you can get a nice observation image. Anyway,
Yes.
I love these binoculars. I love the fucking, the whole scene there where he's like, and so I'm really curious, like, who in the prop department came up with these, where they came from, who had them, how did they acquire them? Like, did somebody be like, this would be accurate for the time? Like, so the movie came out in 1994. So presumably they were shooting in like 93 roughly, like someone in 1993 was like, these are the binoculars. These are the military binoculars that Willem Dafoe's character needs to have. They need to be light, sort of spy shit, right? Because they have that very strong spy vibe to it. Like, they're very utilitarian.
They do, because they look like they're meant to be sequestered somewhere, like secreted away, like hidden on
exactly,
or whatever, and not detectable. Like, they're very stealthy because they're so tiny.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an odd choice. Like, especially for a movie, you would think, like, you want props that are, like, visible, right? I mean, like, only a handful of people like us are like, wait a minute. Why did they choose those binoculars and not some other binoculars, right?
Right, right. Yeah, no, it's amazing. There's two movie props in my life that I have become obsessed with, and this is the only one that I've acquired. The other one is the, God, this is like its whole own podcast, but we're just going to tack it here on the end. Like, we're going into overtime.
That's fine.
Yeah. The other,
especially because this is about conversations that don't need to be recorded.
Yes, exactly. Not every fucking conversation needs to be a podcast. Well, too bad.
Yeah.
You know what you did.
You know what you did. You had it coming.
The other thing is that in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, if you're not familiar, there's a punk who has a boombox.
Yes.
And that boombox is a very particular boombox, and I'm going to find it right now. I spent a lot of time trying to identify what it was, and it's been a while since I've looked at this, so I'm not sure. I don't remember the model of it, and I'm just trying to find if I, like, the problem is it's like not really online.
Yes.
And so it's not actually that simple. And I spent a while and I finally found it. And somewhere I have a collection of notes about this. And that's all we need to talk about right now. Somewhere I have a collection of notes about identifying the boombox. And so I can't remember the exact model of it, but there are, I think there were like four or five different manufacturers that kind of resold this model. So it could be any number of different brand names for the boombox that he has. It was, it was like somewhere I have this image of like, it's a photo collage of like every model.
Yeah.
That is the same boombox, if that makes sense. You know how like back in the day, Radio Shack would sell something and then like fucking you'd also be able to buy the same thing like under like Tandy or Tandy was a Radio Shack name. Like you could buy it like you could buy the same product under like four different brands.
Okay. Yes.
And so that. Yeah. Okay. Including like these like European, like Eastern European brands or something. Like it was really and so I kind of became obsessed with trying to buy one. And for a long time, I had like a watch out on eBay, but they just didn't really come up that much. And so, and the few that did were like broken or whatever. And I was like, I don't want it just for a prop sake. Like I kind of want it to work, you know?
Yes.
Anyway, it was, it just was something I became obsessed with, and somewhere I'll come across that photo again. And then I'll just like, obsess all over it again, but,
all over again, right?
And it like probably doesn't matter because it was probably just like some fucking set members like boom, like it was just on the set or something, right? Like it was just, or somebody was like, quick, run down the street to that that Goodwill and grab a boombox so the punk can have a boombox, like
right? Did it have a tape deck in the middle?
Yeah, it had. Let's see. So, God, I wish I could. Oh, here we go. I found a thread. Here, I'm going to send you the thread. Okay. So you can kind of, somebody else has done the same kind of work I've been doing. Let's see.
Boomboxery.com.
2013. So this is after someone else. So I probably was obsessed with this in 2010, maybe. That's not to say I am one-upping this person. This person has done a lot of good work here, but, the reason I mention that is like, I don't think I'd seen this particular, anyway. So yeah, like you can see it's got two cassette players. Yep. There's according to, according to,
I see AM, FM.
Yeah. So there was like a Toshiba boom beat version. So like Toshiba sold it. It was also known as, there's so many versions of it. Holy shit. Yeah, the RTS-83 bomb beat.
I love that there's this many people, even if it's only a handful, yes, who are like this obsessive over it, that there's like a whole, I mean, it looks like crime scene analysis where there's like photographs, yes, and like red arrows pointing to the item of concern within the photograph. And look at this detail here and this detail there, which are also repeated in this other view from this other photo.
Yeah.
It's so great. Like total internet sleuthing all over a boombox. I love it.
Yeah.
This is what the internet is good for.
Yes. This is back when Google was fucking cool, right? Like you'd find this shit and then, yeah. I'm trying to find, the photo that has like all of them.
Boombox obsessives.
Yeah, because there's just so many fucking.
I was told that the kids are into tape cassettes now.
Are they? Yeah, I have a whole bunch of them and a couple of cassette players and some of the tiny. Yeah, I've been meaning to kind of fix them up and use them. I mean, some of them just work, but I've got some old cassette players that, oh shit, is that it? That looks like it. I don't know. I've got these like old ass fucking Walkmans.
Yes.
That are pretty cool.
One of my like first big purchases as a younger person was a like super expensive Sony Discman. And it worked so good for so long. Oh my god. It was
me
amazing.
Too. Yeah. I bought one when I moved to England. Worth it. Yeah.
It had anti-skip so you could jog with it, like if you were a runner.
Yeah, I don't know if mine had anti-skip. I remember that was a thing and I was a little jealous of it. But
boy.
So this isn't actually the image, but it's like the image.
Okay.
It's just like it's like a whole fucking, and it's from like a it's from a Russian website, so you know, probably you just got hacked.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome.
Oh god.
Oh god.
Is that how that works?
No, I don't know. Fucking maybe.
We got sucked into the dark side through a weird Russian website about boomboxes from the 80s.
Right.
Yeah. I watched an interesting documentary about gymnastics the other night.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, about what's her name? God. Gabby Douglas.
Gabby Douglas. Oh,
it was very cool. It's a good.
Well, that's cool.
It's a good. No. Was it about Gabby Douglas? It was about Simone Biles. And Allie Reisman was in it, too.
Oh, gotcha.
Who I remember from watching. We also watched something about Gabby Douglas, but it was not the same thing we watched the other night. The other thing we watched was, we've been on a kick for professional athletes lately. Watching, like, this is how I got sucked into golf, too. We watched the thing about the like PGA and the Saudi tour and how they were like poaching people from the PGA tour for the live tour. And I was like, man, I didn't give a shit about golf until we got sucked into like international intrigue and like geopolitics with like golf as a proxy. We're like, well, how did that fucking happen? And then the F1 racing, like all of these weird, they're trying to like, you know, they're basically trying to turn any old sport into like a rich people's sport that they then commoditize for the rest of us. So we aspirational ticket sales. But yeah, the Simone Biles documentary is great. If you haven't seen Athlete A, which is about a bunch of the gymnasts and that asshole doctor of theirs, that Athlete A is really good too. It's the documentary about how they finally sent their abuser to jail, which is fantastic.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
What was his name? Larry Nassar.
Larry Nassar.
Yeah. Total piece of shit. And also, like, I mean, it's crazy. Like, we watched the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders documentary recently too, and we were like, I think the people who manage the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders thought this was going to reflect well on them because they belong to an inward-facing circle, and so they can't imagine anyone looking at them through a lens that isn't their own.
Uh-huh.
And so they, like, maybe too willingly agreed to do this documentary, and I don't necessarily know whether the documentary that the filmmaker set out to make was the one that they ended up making. Like, I would love to know if the reason that they approached the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders to make a documentary about them was because they knew how fucked up and culty they were, and they knew that the cultiness of it was what was going to make the show popular.
Yeah.
However, Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders do not think of themselves as a cult, like all good cults. And so they, like, it seems to me from the experience of watching the documentary that the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders as an entity were oblivious to how badly this would make them look.
Right, right.
Like, yes. How poorly they would be reflected in the viewer's eyes.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, we told Conrad, our neighbor, you got to watch this movie or this documentary series. It's really fucking good because it starts off kind of crazy and then it just descends into complete madness. And like, it's super fucking messed up and like very much a cult. And he's like, oh my God. Okay. So he can only watch little bits of it at a time because he's so disturbed by it.
Yeah. It's fucking upsetting, right? Like,
yeah. This is like breathing for me since I can't actually breathe anymore. So I just funnel it in through the biggest pipe possible.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So lots of documentaries. Watch all the documentaries on Netflix if you have time.
And yes. Yeah.
I usually put documentaries on when I'm doing something else, like sorting my seeds or like something where I'm going to be sitting in one place for a long period of time, not moving except for small things. And so then I'll put it on in the background if I'm a captive audience. It's a good way to watch stuff that you don't really want to devote all of your time to watching. Like, I can't just sit and watch television. I can't do it. I have to be doing something else while I'm watching television. So
yeah, like a lot of the YouTube I watch is sort of that way. Like, it's on in the background and I'm doing other shit and trying to
totally.
Yeah. Should we?
Yeah.
I don't know. Do we have like a?
Do we have a color of the day?
No, they're on vacation right now.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I'm not sure. We could do a long story short, maybe.
What about?
I feel like we have other ending segments.
Guess which word I'm thinking of.
Okay. All right. Titty whacker.
Ah, so close.
Oh, what were you thinking of?
It was toilet plunger.
Toilet plunger?
I mean, you almost got it. It was two words.
It was two words.
Same a number of syllables. Uh-huh. The first word starts with a T. Like, it was
pretty close. Yeah.
You get half points on that for sure.
Thank you. I'll take it. Just as a just as some context, and I don't just come up with the word titty whacker off the tongue. Although, to be fair, I did just come up with it.
Yes.
When I first came up with it, but I came up with it because Meg and I are going to work on a book that is based on fictional birds.
Yes.
And so we started making each other laugh by sending each other fake bird names.
Yes.
And it devolved into, because like some of the bird names are true and funny, like the blue-footed booby is hilarious,
right? Or like a nuthatch,
also hilarious.
That's a bird.
Some
of them are really funny. And so like it started out like, I think it was like title of the podcast episode, that when we were thinking too small and it was only gonna be a podcast episode, we're real or not bird names.
Yeah, real or not bird names. And then
like try and trick each other with, is this a real or a fake bird name? And then we just started rolling with fake bird names, and it
blue crested tit boober.
Blue crested tit boober. Oh my god, so good. We had so many of them, and I was like, well, now we have to make a spreadsheet.
Yep.
Because there's so many of them. Mm-hmm. And then we're gonna have to like do the thing we did with the other book and sit down and illustrate all of the names of them, which is the new thing. But we're not illustrating; we're watercoloring instead.
Yeah, we're gonna watercolor. Well, that's an illustration. Yeah.
But yeah, so what that'll, you know, it took us 3 years to do the first one. We'll see how long we get how long it takes us to get this one.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be one of those situations where you should come over, and we'll sit down and we will we'll just sit there and like write and draw. Like I'm kind of wondering if it should be like you draw the birds and then I'll color them in.
Oh, that's such a good idea.
With the watercolors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, if you want to, I don't want to take away watercolor coloring if you
want
to. Yeah.
I'll sketch them and you can color them. That's sweet.
Yeah. So we can do something like that.
See, we already have hatched a plan, and I said hatched because birds.
Because of birds. Yes. Great.
Yes.
Okay. Well, things to look forward to. Thank you everybody for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Okay, but don't be a dick, though.
Okay, don't be a dick. And wash your hands.
And wash your hands, yes. Okay, bye. Okay.